You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson joins me to talk all things film. Filmology is where you'll find him on the web and on Twitter. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Look, we're going to have a chat about Ex Machina. I guess it's one version of the future. If you've got a film that you think does the future best, either dystopia or utopia, whichever tickles your fancy, 1300 222 774 is the phone number. Now, this film, Josh, is made by a man who wrote The Beach, the book, and 28 Days Later. I was really interested because The Beach is effectively what happens when you take people out of society. Does it go pear-shaped or not? 28 Days Later, I guess, is what happens when you kind of just get rid of society and you wipe it out and you have people left. And I guess this is, like all good AI films, what happens when you seek to replace the people who make up society. So I was excited, but give people a bit of an idea about what he tries to do.
Well, I think the mention of Alex Garland there, and you're right, this is his directorial debut, but he has written a number of scripts, and they all seem to follow similar lines. That is, society going wrong in one shape or another. He also wrote the screenplays for Sunshine, the Ishiguro adaptation of Never Let Me Go, and also Dread. So there's a sort of a sci-fi component to this.
I wasn't going to mention Dread, because I think that's a bit of a stinker. But that's just...
Most of his films follow this theme of scientific discoveries or endeavours that go awry, and this is definitely what happens in this film, without giving too much away. It's a sci-fi thriller. It revolves around a young computer programmer played by Donald Gleeson, son of Brendan Gleeson, who's a really promising Irish actor, who is seconded to a sort of futuristic cabin in the woods run by a CEO of a web tech company played by Oscar Isaac, who he discovers very quickly has created a fully functional AI. And he's been brought to this cabin for 1 week in order to test the humanity or how fully functioning this is as an artificial intelligence.
Let's have a little listen to the scene between the two men. So you've got the guy who's built the AI and brought effectively his employee to test. And this is the description of the test.
Do you know what the Turing test is?
Yeah, I know what the Turing test is. It's when a human interacts with a computer. And if the human doesn't know they're interacting with a computer, the test is passed.
And what does it pass tell us?
That the computer has artificial intelligence. Are you building an AI?
I've already built one. And over the next few days, you're going to be the human component in the Turing test.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's right, Caleb. You got it. Because if that test is passed, you are dead center of the greatest scientific event in the history of man.
If you've created a conscious machine, it's not the history of man. That's the history of gods.
Okay, now, Josh, before we get into whether or not you like it, it looks and feels quite quite unusual and different. Can you describe that? Because I can't.
It's a very slick production design. Yeah. It's a very stylish film. I mean, the cement walls of this underground bunker, which is the kind of cabin in the woods, is quite a stark vision. And also the vision of the AI named Ava, and it's definitely in the feminine camp of artificial intelligence, played by Alicia Vikander, who I'm not entirely familiar with, but it's clearly a sexualized model of artificial intelligence, which comes into play later on in the narrative. I think this is a sparse film. It doesn't give the impression that this is a big budget, high concept film. It plays it more in the realm of character drama and sparseness.
And fantastic use of effects, because she's a combination of flesh and robotics, and it's beautifully done.
And we see her internal workings, a little bit like the robot from Metropolis. I mean, in that sort of, in terms of the stomach sort of creation.
Or a sexy C-3PO, I was thinking.
Well, which is Metropolis, basically, a sexy C-3PO. Eve, the robot of Eve. So I really like the production design of the film. The structure of the narrative follows a series of sessions, almost like a sort of a psychoanalytic progression where in the beginning he clearly has the power and is trying to put this robot through its paces, and then gradually the relationship between the two of them, or the three of them really, with the Oscar Isaac character there watching over the interactions.
He's great. He's sort of brooding and intense, and one minute he's charming, the next minute he's threatening, and you don't really know, you have no idea where he's coming from.
Well, he's a strange concoction of the kind of mad scientist figure and also the Keanu Reeves surfer dude.
Yeah. I mean, with a bit of Mark Zuckerberg thrown in.
Yeah, and he keeps dropping dude, and he's constantly drinking, and he's hanging out. He wants to be buddies and friends, and everyone just chill, and next minute you see the violence that lurks beneath sort of rise up a bit. I enjoyed this film. I think it's a really slick film. It recalls, you know, quite overtly films like Blade Runner. I mean, the fact you've got the Turing test here, Blade Runner, you have the Voight-Kampff test. It recalls Artificial Intelligence, the Kubrick/Spielberg film. Again, the same sort of thing, sympathy for the machine or sympathy for the human, and where does it...
So they've got all that dualism, you know, the sort of, agency and submission, mind and body, animate and not animate. So they've got all that going on. But there's quite a lot in there. There's a lot of dialogue that almost could be taken from a seminar on artificial intelligence. And to be honest, I quite enjoyed that. Like the discussion around... So the guy who built the AI, he's essentially the guy who runs Google. And the great revelation is, you know, every time you're giving your data to this Google-like company, they're not monetizing it. You're teaching the AI how to think, which is actually true to a very big extent. You know, every time you put a search into Google, they are not nearly as much interested in your data as they are. They're trying to work out how to get a computer to respond more like a human. So it picks up on that well, and it sort of folds it into the story pretty well. That's felt pretty seamless to me.
Yeah, I like that take on social media, that it's not the what we're looking at, it's the how and the thought process of how we interact with search engines, with machinery, with technology more broadly. I thought that was interesting innovations. For the most part, though, I feel like this is a fairly predictable, conventional narrative. I feel like there weren't any particular twists or surprises. I thought there was a potential to take almost a radical left turn at one point, which I thought would have made the film really interesting. And it acknowledges the potential for that narrative thread and then ignores it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought that ultimately it opts for a more conventional ending, which is not necessarily a criticism in its own right. It's just, it plays a safe game, I think.
But all AI films, they're like time travel films. I mean, there's only so far you can go with them. So it's a pretty entertaining, spooky, stylish attempt, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it certainly lacks the Philip K. Dick's paranoia that you see in things like Blade Runner.
There's allusions to that.
Well, that's what I'm sort of trying to get at.
Yeah.
It could have played a far more radical game in terms of what is he being brought here for, who's in control,
and who is he?
What is the distinction between human and artificial intelligence.
Yes.
I also wanted to kind of flag gender politics, as we do sometimes on this show, because it makes it very clear, given that she is a female artificial intelligence, that she's the object creation of the Oscar Isaac.
But that's actually where I thought it was very interesting, because most of these films are about the machines that men make. Whereas this is very much, you could read it entirely as the women that men would like to have.
Well,
the women that men would like to create. So that actually kind of gets really interesting.
Well, it's fascinating, but it's replaying the Frankensteinian myth. I mean, you could argue that the AI in this film is equivalent to a sex bot, and the film makes that quite overt within the narrative. But I also think the film has it both ways in the sense that it really does indulge a lot of female nudity and kind of gets off on that as well. So on the one hand, it has a conflicted gender politics in terms of the female as objectified and also objectifying the female at the same time.
And I should also say, look, there's a lot to praise in it. I read today, she's trained in ballet. So a lot of her acting, you know, she becomes more human. There's lots of sounds of her machinery and then that is reduced. So that's beautiful and that's really well done. I was thinking, too, in the first half, it'd be great even for sort of the younger teenager, but then it kind of veers into territory that's a little more, satisfying narratively, but maybe not such a great young teenager film. But still, pretty good. A good vision of the future, Josh?
Yeah, it feels very contemporary. It feels very now. It doesn't feel like something that is so far-flung and impossible.
Very near future.
Near future, yeah.
You can imagine this in a few years' time. Look, the film is Ex Machina. I think it is only on at the Nova. I really liked it, actually. It's pretty satisfying, no?
Absolutely, yeah, I enjoyed it, absolutely.
Yeah. I'd love to know your vision of the future film, either something that was horrific or something that was terrible and fantastic, whichever you feel is worth a mention. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. The actress Alicia Vikander was in Testament of Youth, and she's stunning. Did you see Testament of Youth?
No, it's actually in cinemas now, I think.
Is it? Oh, okay. Apparently she's got 6 films coming out this year. Apparently. And she's also, what I didn't realise, it's this film that at South by Southwest, they gave her a Tinder profile. So they gave the character from the film, Ava, a Tinder profile at South by Southwest. And all these people were swiping right, because she's good looking, and they were starting these conversations with her, and they were using all these dialogues of script straight out of the film, some of the initial interviews that she has. So if you heard about that story, by the way, so they were, I mean, look, it's a cheesy
publicity stunt,
but you know, like there's some interesting stuff there on visions of the future, good and bad, or maybe just ones that are your favourite. Rob's call from Chadston. Hi, Rob.
G'day, Raph. I just wanted to mention the film The Road, probably the bleakest future I've ever seen, and you don't really get much out of it except to maybe want to cut your wrist. But,
it's a little like that.
Fantastic film.
Have you read the book?
I haven't read the book. I've got it, but I haven't read it yet.
You've got to read the book, Rob. It's fantastic. Bit scary, but fantastic.
I'll do that.
Highly recommended. Cormac McCarthy, his best? Nah, not his best. I'm not sure if it's his best.
That No Country are sort of neck and neck.
No Country for Old Men. Yeah. Not the cowboy ones? No?
They're up there. I think he's a wonderful author.
Mind you, I've read The Road the most times. I think that's actually one book I've read the most out of all books. I think I've read that about five times.
It's certainly one of the most bleak books I've read, that's for sure.
That's why it's good. It's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? What do you reckon? What's the most intriguing vision of the future you've seen on film?
I've mentioned Blade Runner already, so I think I'd go Gattaca. I think terms of the way in which it approaches style, the idea of genetics, technology, the class system but in a different kind of setting or form. I keep coming back to Gattaca. I think it's a stunning film.
Yeah, okay. Someone texting in that Will Smith one with the German Shepherd, can't remember what it was called. I assume that's I Am Legend.
Oh,
yes. The one with the sort of vampire / zombies.
Great for a half. The first half was great, and then it just falls off the cliff.
Someone's saying Mad Max from Gary and Point Cook. I've got to say, I'm quietly excited about the new Mad Max film.
Save it for next week.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'm going to get a chance to see it. Book of Eli as well from, is it Above in Geelong? I think someone's sign-off hasn't quite worked. Tron as a future vision from Jazz in Seaford. Quite a few people saying Her as the best predictor of the future, which is the Joaquin Phoenix film, where similar to Ex Machina, isn't it, where he falls in love with Scarlett Johansson's voice. I haven't seen it. Is that worth seeing?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's, in terms of stylish films too, it's a beautifully stylish film. And Scarlett Johansson is the voice, so, you know.
That helps. And Brian's call from Blackburn. Brian.
Oh, hi, guys. District 9.
Oh, yes.
What a fantastic film.
A lot of allegory going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, and there was another one that was kind of similar. The guy was in hospital. He woke up. There's nobody there.
28 Days Later.
Yes.
Yes. That's so Alex Garland, he did the script for 28 Days Later.
Yeah, and the guy gets the crows up on the top of the beam. And the blood.
That's correct, yes. That's how one of them gets infected. That's right. That's right. Great film.
Fantastic.
It is a great film. I actually, Brian, you know what? That's one of my favourite openings to a film ever, because you'll remember it opens with the chimpanzee being exposed to the news clips.
Yes.
And then they escape. The chimp escapes, and you only see that for instance, and then it opens on Cillian Murphy's eye, and he's in the hospital.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And you know, they filmed that at the height of daylight savings in London. So those scenes where he's walking over the bridge toward Westminster or away from Westminster, that's like 4 a.m, you know, on a summer morning in London. So that look of evacuation, I mean, that's all real. That's not effects. They've just filmed it on a quiet morning. I'm glad you mentioned it, Brian. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, 28 Days Later. Loved it. That is a classic example, too, of a film being great and a sequel being truly atrocious.
I reckon it's two-thirds of a great film.
Two-thirds? You didn't like the ending.
I thought the last third really falls away. Oh. It's a bit of a trademark of Garland and particularly Danny Boyle, too, I think.
Yeah.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
I want to mention View from the Bridge in a moment, but there's a great text here about Mad Max. Many of the prophecies of Mad Max are already appearing. Highway cops in black cars. The oil running out, creating social schisms. She's the last of the V8s, Max. Holden and Ford gone. Gangs forming. Rural communities empty and wasted. Pete, it's all happening. You're scaring me. Josh, View from the Bridge. What is it? We'll play a little bit of it. Give people an idea.
So this is a National Theatre live production. So it's a film live production that was on at the Young Vic, I think, last year. It's a 1955 play by Arthur Miller. Mark Strong is in the lead. He plays a longshoreman. This is Brooklyn. This is 1950s. This is very much the on the waterfront era amidst the...
Is there anything he's not in?
Mark Strong, he's the everyman at the moment. Yeah. And he is really, I think this is almost one of his best performances that I've seen. He's really remarkable in this. And this is the era of communist paranoia, defined really by Arthur Miller on the one hand, who's the leftist. You know, this is the guy who wrote The Crucible. And Elia Kazan on the other hand, who was the right one, who testified at the HUAC trials. In many ways, I think A View from the Bridge is Arthur Miller's bitter counter to the Kazan on the waterfront, because here we have a critique of someone who ultimately testifies and name names. In fact, it was the subject of a bit of spite between them. Mm. But a wonderful thing. I mean, it's the immigrant tale, because Mark Strong is a Brooklyn-based guy who gets these two Italian relatives across from, I think, Sicily. And then they're illegally working, and one of them falls for his niece, who you suspect the Strong character has illicit desires for as well.
Okay, let's have a little listen to a scene.
Me, I want to be in America, and then I want to go back to Italy when I am rich. Once I'm a citizen, I could work anywhere, and I would find better jobs, and we would have a house, Catherine.
That's right. He marries you. He's got the right to be an American citizen. That's what's going on here.
When am I going to be a wife again, Eddie?
What's going on there, Josh?
Well, it is all about the, I guess, the family unit. I mean, the production, I've seen a few of these NT Live productions. This one has translated probably the best out of all the ones I've seen. It's a minimalist set. It's a white square stage. Everything takes place within that space. The final image, the final tableau of this is utterly remarkable and unforgettable. I think this is just a fascinating era of theatre as well, particularly the way in which it uses the sort of small-scale drama of these families to comment on what was going on socially and culturally in America in the 1950s. And look, there's a wonderful anecdote where Miller sent a copy of the play to Elia Kazan after he'd written it, and Kazan wrote back, I'd be honoured to direct it. And there was a spiteful telegram back where Miller said, I didn't send it to you because I wanted you to direct it. I sent it to you because I wanted you to know what I think of stool pigeons.
Right.
And that was pretty much the end of their friendship and collaboration.
Wasn't there didn't Elia Kazan get a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Oscars, and there was someone walked off the stage, or someone boycotted the Oscars?
No,
was it Robert De Niro or someone?
He was flanked by De Niro and Scorsese. Half the audience stood up and applauded. Half of them sat down in silence. You know, there was these close-up shots, I think, of Nick Nolte or someone of that ilk.
Someone getting upset.
And just, like, stony-faced, like, how dare this guy being...
I mean, because he named names to the
he
un-American...
Did. He and screenwriter Bud Schulberg of On the Waterfront were at the kind of the center of the blacklist, and people responsible for being on the blacklist.
Yeah. I actually have a feeling that Miller play was one of the causes... one of the inspirations for I Married a Communist, the Philip Roth book, I think.
Oh, right.
But I might be, which is precisely about all those longshoremen intensely involved in sort of very left-wing politics, and then ultimately, of course, having their lives dashed and smashed on the rocks. Josh, thank you.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson, you can check out his musings at filmology.com. Ex Machina is only on at the Nova in Carlton. And View from the Bridge with Mark Strong is on at Nova and Palace, is that right? Limited screenings, so just check it out. It'll be in your newspaper.